Welcome to the Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. And as of tonight, which is in certain parts of the country still October the 2nd or October the 3rd, depending on what your time zone, we are now simulcasting on a new affiliate, WTPRN.com. So nice to be with those folks. I have some personal friends that are affiliated with the network. It is known for highly patriotic content throughout the day and constitutional issues. And so we have picked up a very large audience, and it is very, very encouraging for me and for the movement to bring two networks together. Those folks who have joined us with WTPRN, you are in for a treat when you get to know us here at BBS Radio. We've got five streams going on, music 24 hours a day. We've got our own blog sites and lots of really, really fantastic programming, as you yourselves do. So I'm happy to be a part of this endeavor. And we may have a glitch from time to time. This is our first night doing this together, but we're going to make sure that everything works as smooth as silk and as sweet as candy. So nice to have you folks. Now, the first hour, we have a special guest tonight, and in light of many of the things going on in the country, many of you folks out there are going to recognize our guest. He has a very popular website called educate-yourself.org, or some prefer to call it educate-yourself.org. And for the mathematically challenged, we could say educate-yourself.org. My good friend is here with us again tonight. He was with us earlier in the week, Mr. Ken Adachi. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. I appreciate being on with you again.
Well, this is kind of neat that you're on tonight with us joining the new network, too. They get a lot of calls in and into the many shows that they have. The audience is awakened to what's going on in the government. And, of course, you and I, as well as many of the other guests I have on the Evident Footprint Show, do talk about what's going on in government, what's going on in politics, and we even get into the more controversial issues that some of the networks don't tackle during daytime hours. I guess it's as though the UFOs only come out at night. So,
right.
So I thought, in light of what's going on tonight, at least part of the first hour here, you're going to be with us for an hour, so I want to make the best use of the time. We're going to be discussing this fiasco that they've called the bailout, and now they're calling it a rescue. And I know that you listen to NPR radio quite a bit. You're in the California area, and you have just a fantastic website. For anyone that's not been to your site, you can pretty much research any topic. If it's what the military's doing, secret technologies, issues about infiltration into our government by foreign agents, you name it. You cover the whole gamut on your site. Literally, you get millions of visitors to your site every month. And I know that because since you've been posting some of my journalistic works, both from the Idaho Observer or just things that I post on my website, you have been very influential in the amount of website traffic that I get. And I'm acknowledging that for those that haven't been there.
Thank you. I I do appreciate your words. And I'm happy you're getting the volume of readers that you are, because your work certainly deserves it. You're turning out to be quite a rising star, as it were, Don. You have multiple talents in many areas, and I sure enjoy talking with you as often as I do, because it's always a pleasure to hear so many new and fascinating things that you bring to my attention that otherwise I might not hear about it at all.
Well, it's kind of how we work in you know, as journalists, as writers or authors. You are also involved in science, and which I have a keen interest in, and music. I mean, there are so many things that we have common interests in.
Yeah.
And you're gonna find this in the Patriot movement in general. And as you well know, that musicians are very sensitive to what's going on in the world, and they get their inspiration from things that happen in their daily lives. And when you're watching a country being destroyed right before your eyes, you become rather emotional and even take action. A lot of the people in the movement are proactive through their art form and their experience. Some are experts in the law, and they turn that into doing the right thing, opting out of the system and fighting this beast that they like to call the New World Order or the Illuminati or the Great White Brotherhood. They give it names, and which are nothing more than their names. And I know that you yourself are really making a stand. I think often you're too fair and balanced for some of the attacks that you endure. But by and large, people support your work, and not just here in this country, around the world.
Yes,
what
I do get a, you
know, that's what makes you different. You've been following what's going on with this bailout thing, and I know that you know, at least from listening to me talk about it, that it's a ruse, and using your own discernment. Are you hearing anything from people around the country in terms of the amount of traffic you get, or from other parts of the world? Anybody saying anything?
Well, the people who do write in and comment about it, it's not a secret. The public, by a huge majority, it's hard to put the number on it, but perhaps 85% of the public is infuriated by what Congress is doing with this bailout. They realize when it's hitting them in the pocket as directly as this, that we have a majority of individuals in the United States Congress who are not working in the interest of the citizens. And for perhaps 10 years or so, I think I started to use the word traitor during the first Clinton administration. Prior to that, in articles that I wrote, I did employ the word traitor, but perhaps from 1995 on, I did, because I became aware of the intention to dismantle America from within, and I, around 1994, and in 1995, I came upon videotapes made by Phil Schneider. I discovered him while he was still alive, and I became aware of his death when it occurred in January of 1996, and I immediately felt intuitively that he was killed, because the information he was revealing in the spring, summer, and fall of 1995 was extraordinary. And he had even greater inside knowledge and depth of the workings of the inner government, the secret government, and the New World Order than even Bill Cooper. And Bill Cooper had fabulous insights. It's his book, Behold the Pale Horse, that opened my eyes to the entire New World Order agenda. Prior to reading the book, I I really didn't know. I was just your average citizen who, at that point in my life, at that age, knew that the people who generally get into politics are the lowest moral people walking around on the planet. When I was younger, I was idealistic, and I tried to help. I never ran for office, but I tried to assist individuals who I thought were straight shooting, gain office in local government, city government, that sort of thing. And after being involved in that area for perhaps 6 or 7 years, I realized that politicians, one and all, are bums. They're just in it for themselves. They're in it to make as much, gather as much power as possible and make as much money as possible, most of it illegally, kickbacks, special interest payoffs, etc. That's the vast majority of them. They're all in it for self-gain. And in earlier decades...
you really think it's all of them, or...?
Well, I'm using it in a rather broad sense. Of course, it's not every single politician.
99.9, we can safely say.
Some mayors here and there who get elected to office because they're so fed up with the corruption of the previous administration that they just had to throw their hat in the ring because they just couldn't stand it. And here and there, you get an honest person elected to office. It's usually a small-town situation. Almost without exception, big cities are ruled by corrupt big-city mayors. It's very rare you'll find a straight shooter. Now, of course, in front of the cameras, to the media, to the public, oh, my God, they couldn't be more upright and straightforward in working on behalf of their constituents. That's always the mask they put on, but it doesn't take long to scratch beneath the surface. You start digging in, you find out who the players really are in the city, and it's always the money boys. It's the developers, it's the people who want to make money at the expense of local residents in a town. So instead of you have an older city, for instance, in the northeast or the south. Instead of preserving the historic architecture, let's say, from the 19th century when there's a huge boom in America because of the growth of the Industrial Revolution, instead of trying to preserve these and restore them and, you know, make restaurants and malls and gardens, et cetera, that in which you're refurbishing the 19th century architecture. No. Let's just knock it all down, and let's put up these high-rise modern things in which the contractors, everyone who's got their finger in the pie, makes a ton of money, and then they move on to the next town. I saw this. I was raised in the Northeast in the New York metropolitan area, and I saw this again and again and again. I remember well how what used to be stable cities in the Northeast were totally carved up into drug-infested rooming house rat holes because of the unthinking and improperly planned building of throughways and highways through cities. They gutted cities. I saw that in the town that I was raised in. And then once they carved them up in the late 50s into the early 60s with these highways running everywhere, your better caliber owner resident moves out. He moves to the suburbs, and a speculator buys up the buildings in his wake, and they chop them up in the rooming houses, and then they rent the riffraff who commit a lot of crime in the area, and then the other elderly owner residents bail out because, you know, you don't want your 82-year-old grandmother getting mugged by some crackhead. So they bail out. The speculators buy up those houses. More rooming houses. The neighborhood just goes into the toilet. I've seen it over and over and over again. And in the meantime, does the city respond to the city government, respond to the concerns of the remaining legitimate, honest, hardworking neighborhood resident owners and tenants who are trying to keep the neighborhood crime-free. No way, no way. A lot of empty lip service. They don't provide the police protection. What they do is they get paid off by drug dealers, so the cops are very often on the take. So drug activity explodes, the whole city goes down, you get even a greater flight out of the city, and people flood in from other countries to take up the vacuum. And well, it's so that's the conditions that I was exposed to when I was younger and trying to help get honest government in the big Northeast city. And again and again and again, I can't tell you how many speeches I heard and attended because I was involved with committees to try to reelect this and reelect that, and I was involved in doing research to find out. So anyway, I was very much involved in it. I got to see everything from the inside. And
now, my experience from being raised in the Midwest and really having traveled around the country, I began seeing this everywhere, was how they began dismantling the towns, too, because a small town anywhere in the country, you know, we're talking about an average-sized town that maybe has somewhere between 20 to, let's say, 70,000 people.
Okay.
They would build these malls outside of the city limits where people had to drive out of the town to get to the mall.
Right. Right.
And it, and then as all the anchor stores of the mall moved out of the town, because, you know, we used to have a JCPenney's and a Sears on the main drag.
Yeah,
and
downtown
and
becomes a ghost land, or they...
Exactly. And then all the attorneys move in and buy up those properties
right.
at nothing. Okay,
yeah.
And these are the same people that become the politicians.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Because this is what you're describing is exactly what happened in the city that I came from. Before the, as you say, the suburban malls started to spring up. Maybe I'm starting to guess here. Maybe mid-60s, late-60s in that range.
Oh,
prior
yeah,
to that, your main
yeah.
shopping area was downtown in the city you lived in. So naturally, there was a vested interest for store owners, et cetera, for the city to keep it crime-free because that's where people came to shop. You know, if you're going to get mugged, people aren't going to keep on shopping there. But that's exactly the same scenario that occurred where I lived as well. Suburban malls, beautiful to go to. And what happens, of course, is that as those malls draw in more people, people start building in the surrounding suburbs around that mall. So the suburbs grow while the inner city becomes dehydrated, but usually non-citizens flood in, particularly if it's a factory-type town. And if there's work to be had,
mm-hmm.
you'll have, in the case of the Northeast, a lot of people, for instance, from Puerto Rico, for instance, flooded into the area beginning somewhere in the mid-50s. There was a big migration of Puerto Ricans into that area. But other people from South America, from Jamaica, et cetera, poor areas around the world tend to gravitate towards the New York area to get a foothold in this country, and they fan out to the towns.
Well, they were coming
around
in by the boatloads.
Yeah, exactly, right.
Boatloads, and I'm talking thousands and thousands, each ship arriving at Ellis Island.
Yeah,
and we're not
oh, yeah.
talking about political refugees here. You know, this is plan that we're seeing in overdrive right now, being laid out before us, kind of covertly. You know, if you're not living in New York and you're not seeing this, you don't really pay attention. New York is such a busy place, people there don't even pay attention. They mind their business walking down the street. They do spend time with their families and friends in Central Park on the weekends, but when they're going to work, when they're driving through traffic jams, getting to and from the subway, getting there safely without getting mugged, their mind is on just going from one point, point A to point B. and that's about it. So they don't really pay attention to what's happening to the inner city.
Yep.
And we see this in movies all the time. You can see these things in the incidental shots that are picked up in movies. Let's say it's a movie about basketball, and they're in the Bronx or Brooklyn, in a concrete or an asphalt yard with a high cyclone fence around it, like near
yep.
a school. You know that scene I'm describing.
Absolutely.
And you'll see the very people you're talking about just as passersby. Being picked up in the movie. Nowadays, it's chemtrails. I notice, you'll be watching this really great movie, and all of a sudden, you'll see a whole pattern of chemtrails in the sky. Up
yes,
above.
It's amazing.
It was always there. You see, these hints about those times were in those movies as well. It's just that we were oblivious to it because we didn't grow up around that. Yeah. Now, what we have right now, and we can see the progression because even the malls are failing. How many of these malls now have empty stores because
oh,
of
yes,
places
yes, particularly
like
here in
Walmart?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's accelerating in this area because it's an expensive, relatively expensive area of Southern California. And I came here in 94, and I'd never seen so many malls in my life. I thought there was a lot in the Northeast, but I didn't have a clue until I got here that it seemed like I settled in Costa Mesa. It seems like I walked every block. There's another mall every block. It was unbelievable. I was wondering how do people not get confused? Because it just seems to be a labyrinth of malls everywhere. And I wondered when I first got here, how can all these stores be open and make enough business? I thought the competition would be, would be too much.
They're owned by the same people.
Okay.
The jewelry stores are all owned by the same people. Now you can say, well, Sears doesn't own JCPenney's, but they're selling each other's products. They put different labels on the same products. It's become consolidated and concealed. Much like our political parties. Is there really any difference between Republican and Democrat? Most people that know the answer to that will tell you no, there is absolutely no difference. If there is, it's a challenge, it's a contest to see who can be the most corrupt.
Yeah. Well, anyway, just getting back to how I noticed the downward spirals of American cities, the influx of third world individuals into America, of course, picked up dramatically after 1965 because Bobby Kennedy and others decided that it would be a good idea to change the immigration rules so that rather than allow in the most skilled, those who have adequate financial resources to sustain themselves, and the most educated, let's do just the opposite. Let's let in the least educated, those with the least financial ability, and just open up the floodgates. Let's forget. Let's turn down the quota for a country like Ireland, for instance, and let's open it wide open for some Caribbean island . That was a huge, drastic, and profound, I'm not going to say blunder, it was an intentional campaign, but it has had profound effect on the direction of inner city life in cities throughout this country, number one. And we see now that we're also reaping a bitter whirlwind from equally unthinking and misguided allowances in the influx of so many illegal aliens from south of the border. This is having a huge impact on all of America, not just the South and the Southwest as it might have been perhaps 10 or 15 years ago. Now it's throughout America, illegal aliens have flooded into all major cities throughout this country. And it was an intentional policy because it's part of the larger agenda to dismantle America from within. So they intentionally did not beef up the border guard. They intentionally did not put up fence or electronic monitors. All technology that they had since World War II forward could have stopped a mouse from scurrying across the border. They certainly have had the technology for 60, 70 years to monitor anyone moving across the border. It was a matter of will. It was intentional. So it might have been very beneficial for people in agriculture who can get cheap labor to pick a harvest, and of course that meant more profit for those people. And in all fairness, it probably meant lower prices for produce and vegetables and fruits, et cetera, at the grocery store. But you pay a price in the long run when you cut a corner, when you short shift someone in this country. Eventually, it comes back on you. And now, it kills me when I listen. As I mentioned, usually in the morning, there's two radio stations I can receive here that have talk on them.
Yeah.
And do we have to take a break now?
We're going to take a break in a minute. You heard that music. Yeah.
Okay.
You hold that thought, Ken Adachi. And folks, you're listening to Evident Footprints on VBSRadio.com, also on WTPRN.com. And we're going to take a short pause for the cause. We'll be right back.
The Idaho Observer, a monthly 24-page newspaper in its ninth year of addressing issues that affect all freedom-loving Americans, is one of the few remaining newspapers courageous enough to print the truth. Concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you? Subscribe today. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues, the Idaho Observer prints what you need to know to be a fully informed American. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307.
HempUSA.org is now offering free shipping worldwide to better serve our customers. Our goal is to get these fine hemp products to you in the least amount of time so you can enjoy what the powder seeds and oil can do for you. HempUSA.org has a warning that the U.S. food supplies are dangerously low, and we urge you to protect your family with hemp storable foods today. Tomorrow may be too late. Call 908-691-2608 or visit HempUSA.org. This incredible food source is loaded with enzymes so your body can digest the food you eat. And it creates an alkaline environment where cancer can't grow and parasites cannot live, and brings funguses, viruses, and bacterial levels down and to a halt. Try our powder seeds and oil today. Call 908-691-2608 or visit hempusa.org. If the body has the proper nutrition, it will heal itself. Ask yourself, why does our government not allow this crop to grow in the U.S.? This product is also great for pets and animals. Call 908-691-2608 or go to hempusa.org today.
Hey everybody, this is your new friend, Julio, and I'm talking to you because I like to listen to BBSRadio.com. I sneak over the border every day, and I go see my girlfriend. She got a computer. Come on now, sing it, girls.
We'll be right back.
back with our second segment on BBS Radio. You're listening to Evident Footprints and our special guest, Ken Adachi. Ken, I had to let you hear that. It was appropriate for the topic. You know,
yeah.
I learned to play that kind of music when I was living in northern Mexico.
Oh, really?
But at that time, they called it the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles. Anyway, little joke there.
Yeah, well, we both like music, and I certainly like South American music, Latin music, Mexican music. It's I appreciate the culture and the music very much, and hold no negative feelings towards any group. What I do not approve of and do not sanction are people coming into this country illegally. That's a criminal act, and people who do it do not deserve to be treated other than as an illegal alien who is supposed to, if they want to enter this country that badly, apply with the proper channels the way true immigrants did in earlier periods. And I know it took a long time. We had to wait. My wife's from Japan. It's a developed country, industrial country. Had all kinds of credentials in terms of education, had money, did not present any problems. All the paperwork was in order. There was nothing that, there was no reason why the paperwork shouldn't have been processed perhaps in a month or two. Yet we had to wait 18 months because the bureaucracy at that time, the bureaucracy of the, the Immigration Naturalization Service, as it was called, was horrific. The most incompetent, sloven, people I've ever encountered in my life. We've waited numerous times in lines for, we had to go out to get in line with mostly Mexican people 3 or 4 in the morning in order to get a ticket so that we can, be allowed, I being an American citizen, in order to be able to talk to, somebody inside to get to the next stage of her filing her paperwork, which was completely in order. And, yeah, we had to wait 18 months before she could even arrive in this country. And then we had to get out there 2 o'clock in the morning on, I can't remember how many occasions, maybe a dozen occasions, in order to meet with, immigration people because the majority of the people we're waiting in line with are mostly, from Mexico and South America, et cetera.
Now, the one thing you could have done is invested in a van. Get 743 pounds of pot, put that in the van, and drive over the border from Mexico.
Yes, I could have thought of that.
Red carpet treatment.
Yes.
You know, that's what you're describing is just the total decaying of the very laws that these guys create to control us, to get us into this mindset of compliance.
Right. It's typical of what you see in the past perhaps 3 or 4 decades. I remember earlier times in which the government, whatever government body, it could be police, it could be federal officials, state officials, city officials, much more conscientious and cared about doing the job correctly. And above all, gave maximum deference to a native citizen who was doing everything correctly according to the book. And what you see in this country for a long time is those who, and immigration is the best example, those who do it honestly, follow the government's procedures, rules, pay out these unconscionable fees. Now it's just robbery. Now what they're doing with these fees, to get this visa status, that visa status, whatever. But they put the legal citizen, the guy who's obeying the rules, at the back of the bus, and they treat you like you're a criminal. But those who take the shortcuts, come into the country illegally, it's a different story entirely. And, well, we've gone a little bit afield from what I really wanted to address, but I just wanted to take the first half hour just to talk observations about what I noticed about how America has decayed, and it has everything to do with the decisions of the politicians in office, because for the most part, whether you're working poor or middle class or upper class, you're focused on making a living, and living, raising your family, you're getting to the dentist, getting the kids' braces. You're too focused on just living your life to be concerned with the day-to-day matters of running government. And what happens is that, and what has happened, is that now government is largely run by corrupt, extremely incompetent, sloven excuses for leaders and bureaucrats. We're at the bottom of the barrel, and now we have people who are being selected to run as the vice presidential running mate for the Republican Party, who hasn't got the intellectual capacity or experience to be a dog catcher. This woman, Palin, was the mayor of a town of 7,000 people. Big deal. There were factories where in the town that I was raised in that had over 7,000 people in it. She became governor.
With more than that in it, you know.
Yeah. And she became governor in the wake of Stevens' indictment. There's another good example. How a man of Stevens' long-standing corrupt conduct for I don't know how many decades could stay in office that long tells you a lot about the inattentiveness of the Alaskan voter to what's going on and in their government, because when you can stay in office that long and you're as corrupt as he was, it tells you something about the electorate. So I'm just amazed that the people who now are running for president is about as unqualified as you can get. And as you know, we've talked about it, there's the disqualification goes much deeper than just the lack of experience, lack of good decisions or beneficial decisions when in their voting record. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the fact that neither of these guys are qualified to run for president because they don't meet the birth qualifications required by the Constitution. Well,
yeah.
However, in the time remaining, I want to focus on the current event with the bailout, because the heart of the matter lies with the politicians who are making these decisions. Something I didn't expect to happen, but it was pleasant to see it happen, occurred a couple days ago when the House voted down the first run-through of the bailout. At least we had a majority that said no, mostly due to the efforts of younger Republicans, and of course there were Democrats as well. I don't want to indicate the majority of those voting against it were Democrats, but the Republicans were expected to go with the bailout, but enough of them did not, and it was turned down. And when they spoke on television cameras, they said the reasons, which are the correct reasons. The bailout is a relief of the obligation from bankers who made foolish, foolhardy decisions in order to maximize profit, of course, during the overinflated market boom, to offer mortgages to not only new homeowners, which is what's usually portrayed in the media, but more importantly, speculators, people who already own a home, but as you see in those late-night TV programs that try to talk you into taking a real estate course, a large percentage of those people who got those subprime mortgages, a very large percent of them were speculators. They were in it to make a quick buck.
Yeah, and if I can make a point in regard to that, Ken, you have individuals that were running Fannie Mae that were cleaning up, making exorbitant amounts of money on the side. Now, that doesn't happen unless everybody's making a bunch of money on the side.
Yes.
And it so happens that the three individuals, pretty much since 2004 onward, when they claim they started making these discoveries. You've got a $240 million parachute from one, a $28 million parachute for another, and we're talking about the golden parachutes as they bow out and let another one take over,
yes.
And a $20 million parachute.
Right.
So you've got darn close to, let's say, you've got over $280 million.
Yes.
Almost $290 million in golden parachutes for three people. Tell me they were the only ones making money.
Yes.
And one of them had to return $50 million. To me, the level of corruption, we're talking about someone who's running a federally sponsored home ownership program, financing, mortgage, you know, it's tied in with all the banks, all the insurance companies, and they're speculating this money in the derivatives and the hedge fund markets.
Right.
That's where the real issue is. That's the part
yep.
of this that we're not hearing. And if you can bear with me for a moment, I'd like the listening audience to know about this, because there have been a couple of people alluding to this in the last day or so. Now, I was disappointed tonight in Dennis Kucinich's comments before the House of Representatives, because he was painting this Democratic picture of we need health care, and this is not what this is about, folks. This is about corrupt banks and bankers and politicians all the way to the top of the White House stealing money for three consistent generations or administrations. We're talking about Bush 41, Clinton, and Bush 43.
Right.
And we've said this on other shows. Earlier this week, you got to hear me open my show with a 15 or 20-minute rant about my disgust with what's going on and the fact that they're lying about this, and they're blaming it on the people that got the loans. They're blaming it on the people that lost the jobs when the manufacturers shipped the jobs out of the country and took the companies with them.
Right.
They're blaming all of this on the people, and they're making us pay as if we, because it's our fault or because it's someone within our ranks is the cause of this, that we should pay this money. This is going to put everybody in, you want to talk about indentured servants for eternity? That's what this is going to do.
Yes.
If they put this through. And what they're masking is the fact that all the trillions of dollars that since the early 1980s, under Wontegate and under the double and triple hypothecation of the funds, through Fidelity accounts, listen to this, folks, Fidelity accounts and pure trusts with judges and attorneys, these are illegal, but Fidelity accounts are speculating that money overseas and offshore accounts. This has become an international ping-pong ball bouncing from Bank of America to Wachovia to Goldman Sachs to Citibank. These are the very banks in trouble. Bear Stearns, J.P. Morgan Stanley, Deutsche Bank. Deutsche Bank was involved in the 2000 house scandal where they got the contracts in Cleveland and tore the houses down. And somebody actually sued them because he didn't get a copy of the contract. This is a violation of SEC laws, you see. So, and the judge ruled against Deutsche Bank. Now, how are those people going to get their houses back? They've had their houses foreclosed illegally, And then have to have them torn down on top of it. You see, this is the systematic, intentional, bargain basement dumbing down of our real estate and our real estate values so that they can bring foreign money in. You see, if they give these people an opportunity to own a piece of our land and destroy our country at the same time, they become international heroes. But their problem is the money that they stole is in foreign bank accounts offshore, and that's been frozen. They need liquid capital. What a better way than to tell us that they are going to force us to pay the money to allow them to continue the money laundering with now fresh and legal capital. That's the issue. That's what you're not hearing from any of these politicians. You're not hearing it from the president. You're not hearing it from Nancy Pelosi. You're not hearing it from anybody. And all the while this is going on, has anyone seen Dick Cheney? Anybody notice Dick Cheney anywhere? He's pulling the strings on this, guaranteed. So,
excellent, Don. You're really the dimension of the story that you just alluded to is surely not known by anybody to speak of in this country. I'm gleaning that aspect of the story from you, but it does make the entire, let's say, gravity of the swindle 100 times greater than if that sequestering of stolen money in offshore accounts were not part of the story. I mean, it's a swindle by anybody's yardstick. If you just realize that the bulk of senators and leadership positions, especially the ones who get on the cameras, the ones who are on camera on the TV news shows, the ones who get interviewed on mainstream radio, and it seems NPR radio to have the greatest crop of them all, those people are talking to the American public as if they're trying to save the country. They're presenting a case, and they're doing it very theatrically. They're very convincing actors. If you just listen to them, if you're particularly young people, they don't know the history of the bulk of these politicians. I just was mentioning to you, Christopher Shays. I've known of him and about him all my life, and I know well his background. And he was someone who came on NPR radio a couple of days ago to say that that they in the House there have to make the right decision. They have to get back to work. See, what they mean is when he's saying we got to get that, that means you have to vote the way Wall Street and the bankers want us to vote, not the way the American people. And he said to the interviewer, he says, you know, sometimes you just got to bite the bullet. You got to do the courageous thing. This is Christopher Shays of Connecticut who said it. The courageous thing and ignore the popular will of the people, he said, because that can change and flip like the wind, he said. He says you got to do the right thing for the country, even though it might not be popular at the moment, he says. But he says, you know, to the interviewer, he says, you know, he says, I really believe there's a silent majority of Americans who really believe and know this bailout is the right thing.
Well, you know what,
silent majority, isn't that?
Yeah, you brought to mind the fact that nobody except Bernanke, and I think these were two Freudian slips in those hearings before the Banking Committee a couple of days ago, mentioned $14 trillion, that's with a T, $14 trillion that Citibank is illegally holding. And it's one of Clinton's cronies, Robert Rubin, who's holding that. These people have been arrested in Europe. Paulson has been arrested, Greenspan, Bush, 41. They've been detained. They've been warned in so many words that they have to come through with these payments. Putin is owed $30 billion, his personal take on this whole thing. And we're talking about the Wantagate settlements. That's what we're talking about here.
Yes, yes.
All these other countries are owed amounts around $5 billion and up. Now, Putin upped the ante quite a bit. Right before this Georgia skirmish that took place on the opening day of the Olympics, that was no accident that happened on that day. He upped it by $57 billion. So now he's asking for $87 billion. So when you see the House of Representatives turn down the $700 billion bailout, and then they start calling it a rescue package, and the Senate has their hands on it for all of a day, and they tack on another $150 billion, is that for their efforts that they're doing that? Are we supposed to feel gratified that they're doing that? Yes. Doesn't anyone notice that they just got another 20% or 30% more corrupt than they are in one day?
It's worth noting that in order to persuade enough House representatives to switch their vote in favor of the bailout, they're using unbridled attempts at the pork in order to bring them along. I heard a couple of examples on the radio while coming home this evening, and I was amazed. Some wooden arrow maker, I think, in Oregon, got a subsidy now as a sweetener to get his representative to come on board. There were numerous cases. I think you mentioned that they added about $150 billion in additional costs. So this is to on top of the $700 billion. We have to remember that this is a part of a agenda to break America from within. While we're talking about the details of the bailout and the inappropriateness of the Senate and the House voting in favor of it, because it's against the immediate, but also the long-term interest of the American citizens. No legislature who was really interested in preserving their country and the economic health of the nation would vote in favor of this, because it's a bailout. It's a bailout of people who first have all the money to begin with, who made risky investments because they wanted to gain even more obscene profit margins. And because of that risky behavior, real estate prices were allowed to overinflate. And then you had these selling mortgages to people incapable of paying them to keep up the payments. And you had a regulatory commission that was it's not a matter of wasn't keeping an eye on the ball. They intentionally allowed this event to transpire so that we would be at this crisis situation. The dismantling of regulations in the banking industry began with the beginning of the Reagan era. Prior to that, and for the previous, 80 years of this country, that from the late 19th century up to the time Reagan was elected, much pain, sweat, misery, and tears were shed in order to prevent a trust activity that was, rampant in the 19th century. That's where all the Sherman antitrust laws, et cetera, grew out of the illicit activity of big business at that time. And you had hard decades upon decades of people getting beaten in front of factories by paid goons who were fighting for labor rights and labor laws and et cetera. And part of the reining in of the excess of big business came about in the way of regulation, particularly in the 1930s. Agencies, commissions were formed to keep an eye on illicit, improper behavior in the financial sector, stock market, etc. And as long as those regulatory agencies and with good people in charge, of course, that's a necessary part of it. But as long as they're in place, the country is going to prosper and we're going to grow. But as I mentioned to you, I found out, 94, 95, that the intention to dismantle, to ruin, to destroy America from within was set in motion a couple hundred years ago initially, but it really accelerated in the 20th century. And from World War II forward, the end game, as it were, was put into place. This is why we saw during the 60s, for instance, the steel industry. The United States was the greatest steel producer in the world. We had foundries all over huge foundries all over the country, Pennsylvania, etc. Now we're not a major steel producer at all. We have a few foundries, but they're very small. Your major steel producers are in East Europe and in Asia.
Yeah.
That wasn't an accident. That was an intentional part of the plan to... And so they've done it with everything. All heavy manufacturing, which America was the premier manufacturing country, nation in the world for anything, for high-tech or heavy machinery, automobiles, steel, you name it, it was made here in the United States. All these industries have been driven out of the country to third world countries for the most part because the labor is cheap.
Yes, Ken, we're unfortunately, we're already out of time. You see how fast an hour flies.
Yes, I do.
I want to thank you, and we do want to continue this discussion. We're going to be doing that in the next hour. I'm going to be taking calls from the listening audience. I want to thank you for coming on to Evident Footprints, especially on this inaugural show with WTPRN. And I want to let people know they can read your fine journalistic works at educate-yourself.org 24/7. It's one of the best websites in the whole world. And I really want to thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you, Doug.
We have to talk about this more. So
yes, we will. We'll pick it up on our next conversation.
All right. Thank you so much for being on the show. Folks, don't go away. We have another hour of this show coming your way. And we're going to take some of your comments or your questions in regard to this very important issue, this bailout or this rescue of America's banksters. You're listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. Welcome back to the second hour of Evident Footprint on this inaugural broadcast, simulcast with BBSRadio.com as well as WTPRN.com. That's We the People Radio Network, and so happy to have you folks with us. I'm going to give out some call-in numbers. Those of you who are unfamiliar with BBS Radio, you can simply go to www.bbsradio.com if you're listening through WTPRN. And we have on our homepage, which we refer to as the index page, you've got all kinds of program information there. A slight scrolling down on the right side of the screen, you'll see BBS Station 2. I'm going to give those numbers out if you've got a pen and paper or a pencil and paper, or you want to write it down on your fingernails. Feel free. The toll-free number in the USA and Canada is area code 888-228-4494. Again, that number, 888-228-4494. Toll-free worldwide, 877-489-6350. Again, one more time, that toll-free number, 877-489-6350. And we have some direct lines. I'll give one of those out, 530-776-5154. Again, 530-776-5154. And I welcome your calls into the show. Share some comments you might have about what's going on. Until I do hear from some callers, I will make some comments and share some information with you as to my take on what I've been witnessing both in the House of Representatives and in the Senate. Now, I've not listened to every speech. It's quite a bit to prepare for a radio show. Any talk show host will tell you you invest a good part of the day figuring out what's really going on. You try not to listen to mainstream media when at all possible, but when the only source of the information is through the mainstream, we know we have to use our discernment and read between the lines and figure out what's really going on. I got some interesting information in some emails from a few people around the country, and this pretty much is a regular occurrence since I started my own talk show, as well as since I started writing for the Idaho Observer. Now, before I go into reading this particular email that I'm sort of hinting about, and it's about this banking crisis, for those of you who are unaware, I do write some major genealogical pieces for the Observer, and it's basically an offshoot of my interest at getting to the truth in regard to who these people are. Real Americans would not destroy their country, and we're witnessing what we would call treasonous acts, and yet these are infiltrators. And, in fact, I spell infiltrator with an I, as in the word, the spelling of the word traitor. Just put infill in front of it, and you get the idea. They can't commit treason if they have no business being here, and they're illegal. Well, we've got several people that fit this category. Without a doubt, the research has been done, and it disputes who these people are. John McCain. I've written a series that four parts of it have come out in the Idaho Observer. Actually, three have hit the paper. The next edition in October will contain part four. The series is called The Three Stooges Go to Washington. Parts one and two are about the McCain clan, and their real name is McCann. I examined shipping records. I looked at all the biographical accounts and found that it's nothing but a pack of lies. And that if you really do some research and dig up documents, you can find that these people are not who they claim to be. Now, if you disregarded everything that I wrote about the McCain clan, and there's quite a bit of information that will get your head spinning. It's a lot of information. But if you take the claim that he was born at Coco Solo Naval Base in the Panama Canal Zone on August 29th, 1936, that's the story. If you take his story for what it is on the surface, then you should be able to go to the Naval Base Hospital and find some record of that. Of course, there is no record of him being born at the Naval Base Hospital. So the next place you would look would be the Panama records themselves, which are also kept by the Americans who were there because they were basically managing the Panama Canal at that time. There was a naval base there, Coco Solo. We know that. Since there were no hospital records, then the next place to look would be the National Archives, which has a record of the certificates of live birth for the year of 1936. Now, John McCain is not in that book either. And I've already talked about this on talk shows. It's been published in the newspaper. By the way, it's on my website, directlightproductions.com. You click on articles at the top of the page, and it'll take you to the index for articles. Just look for Three Stooges, go to Washington, there you are. Now, since it's not in the National Archives and it's not at the hospital, somebody made a gross error, one would think. In fact, I've read some research where one particular writer for a newspaper says, well, it was an obvious snafu. That's a quote. It was called a snafu. How many of you can prove where you were born? How many of you have birth certificates that actually show who your parents are? And if you follow their birth certificates, you can prove who your grandparents are, where they were born, what day they were born, who the attending doctor was, lots of little details. And here we have John McCain, born in 1936. I hear things like, well, they didn't keep good records in those days, Don. They just weren't good at keeping records. But boy, we have one hell of a history about what occurred when Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. Or the stories and all the history about the Civil War. Or for that matter, for the Revolutionary War. Or the founding of our country. We're able to, in the late 1700s, or even in the early 1600s, when pilgrims were landing here, we have records of what transpired. We can quote orators and statesmen and the founding fathers. We can quote them verbatim. But a man born in 1936 can't definitively prove where he's been born. In fact, has anyone seen a birth certificate for John McCain? I ask that question because the one we saw for Barack Obama is an absolute fraud. It's a forgery. Now, going back to McCain, if you disregard all of the anomalies that I reported in the article, The Three Stooges Go to Washington, Parts 1 and 2. At the very end of Part 2, I mention Executive Order 8981. Now, those history buffs out there, this was from Franklin Delano Roosevelt, issued to the engineers who were there surveying the land at Coco Solo Naval Base. This order was issued December 17th. In May, the engineers were there surveying the land, in May of that same year. Now, I haven't mentioned the year yet, but this is critical. This man was born at Coco Solo Naval Base Hospital, but in 1936. Get this in your, picture this in your mind. It's really not that difficult, but I'm throwing lots of figures out there. 1936 is the year of the birth in the hospital. Yet on December 17th, 1941, Roosevelt issues Executive Order 8981 instructing them to mark the boundaries where the hospital is to be built. And there are instructions about how the property is to be acquired, either purchase it or lease it. So this wasn't even American territory, as they're claiming. He was born on American soil, or he was with his parents. I tell you this now, that argument doesn't fly either, because his parents weren't Americans. They were not born here either. So, just on the basis of the one story that he himself was born there is an absolute lie, because on December 17th, 1941, over 5 years after his supposed birth, the engineers were instructed to begin laying out the boundaries for establishing the location as to where the hospital would be built. There was no hospital there even 5 years after his birth, if he was born in 1936. That one fact disqualifies him. Now, show me a birth certificate. Show us a birth certificate. People should be demanding the same thing. Just that one fact alone. Now, we have the same issue with Obama. Obama's actually copied someone else's certificate of live birth and then masked out certain sections. There are no proper seals on the document. The typeset is different. The pattern of the paper, the border of the paper, missing signatures, missing a certification number. It was forensically examined by a very highly qualified document expert and said it's a horrible forgery, is how he described it. The Secretary of State in Hawaii said was probably frightened into not talking about it very much, but even she had to admit eventually that this document was, she'd never seen anything like this before, is how she described it. And then I did the research on Obama, and I can tell you that the biographical accounts and the autobiographical accounts in his two books are nothing but lies, nothing but obfuscation. And in the article, which is a rather difficult read, I've had many listeners to my radio show email me and tell me they've read it a couple of times and they're going to go back and read it again. I'm telling you, I spent months researching this, and this information was difficult to connect the dots. There is so much information, and it goes, it continues on. It's like the octopus growing tentacles and then having this thing morph into another octopus on each tentacle, growing new tentacles. Because it's money laundering, and it ties into the very issue that we were talking about in the first hour of the show tonight. This financial corruption in the mortgage industry, in the real estate markets, they're using the internet as a monopoly board, basically, is what they're doing. Creating aliases for these people. And I name just a handful of the aliases of the Dunham and the Obama family. And I could do the same thing with the McCain clan as well. Now, we already know that he's part of, McCain himself is part of the Keating Five. So we know he's already been involved in real estate corruption. In fact, I would venture to guess that there's probably only 0.1% of all the politicians in the country that are somehow not involved in real estate corruption. And McCain's state, Arizona, is the hotbed of that corruption in terms of the internet and in terms of computers. And that's right in Maricopa County where that's occurring. Now, that has a direct tie to what's going on in Chicago. I would venture to guess Utah, whether it's Salt Lake City, Orem, or Provo, doesn't matter. Likely it's something going on with the Mormons. Because there's money laundering, interstate money laundering going on, which are all felonies. Every time they do one of these transactions, a felony is being committed. And what is evident, and whether we're talking about what I discovered in researching the backgrounds of these candidates, or whether I'm talking about the judges who are raping the system in the Child Protective Services, domestic relations, bankruptcy, probate, whatever, in Cook County, Illinois, it's the same thing. And it's not exclusive to Cook County. The whole state of Illinois has been corrupted by this. There are more judges, there are more courtrooms in Cook County, Illinois, than most of the country combined. It's the model for the corruption in the Justice Department. And I'm outspoken about it, and I'm not the only one. There are a lot of people that have been shafted by the courts. And this money that we've been hearing about is all related to money that has been siphoned out of the country into foreign accounts. I mentioned in the first hour, Fidelity accounts. These Fidelity accounts are basically secret accounts. We're not supposed to know about these. But the word gets out. Attorneys know about them. They know the judges have them. Many of the attorneys become judges, and then they're part of the game. And if these judges don't comply, if they cannot get a litigant out of their way, many times it's a whistleblower. I've talked about Dr. Sheila Mannix. I've had Dr. Sheila Mannix on my show. This woman is a brilliant psychologist who fought to get her children the divorce decree from her abusive ex-husband enforced by the courts, and they went after her. She was in the process of getting a Montessori school, and she had some money saved up to facilitate that. And when they found out she had some money, they went after her. They went after her, and they have criminally impoverished this woman. And she has not given up. Her faith in God is so great. And she has banded together, networked together with people across the country. These are the principles that our Constitution is supposed to be upholding for us to stop corrupt individuals from taking over the government. And it's the hotbed of corruption there in Chicago. Happens to be where Hillary Clinton is supposedly from. By the way, the next issue of the Three Stooges, the Washington, is going to be about Hillary Clinton. I'm going to expose her roots. And it's going to blow some minds, but it's going to make a lot of sense. Just like the McCain genealogy I did makes a lot of sense. And the Obama genealogy makes a lot of sense, because who are these people? They come out of nowhere, totally incompetent. They've made a hero out of John McCain for what? For crashing millions of dollars of jets? And for murdering hundreds of people on a ship? You can't even get the true story on the internet. You go to Wikipedia and they've got it described as an electrical fire. The guy wet started his plane. You've got witnesses that have been on the Patriot Networks. They've been on my show. Actually, two shows that I've hosted. The TNT News Hour, which I used to host for BBS Radio. I interviewed many of the very people that were in the prison camps in Hanoi. And they told me stories about McCain. And I've talked to people who have seen the intelligence photos plastered on the SOG headquarters, Special Operations Group headquarters, blow-ups of McCain getting out of a limousine with a Vietnamese general, dressed up in their clothes, not in his uniform, dressed up in Vietnamese, you know, playboy-type clothes, going into a restaurant, meeting prostitutes, being put up in a hotel. Oh, yeah, he was tortured. He was tortured. And what they don't tell us is that there were arrest warrants for at least 16 of those people who had committed treason when they picked them up and brought them back to the United States. And Lyndon Johnson quashed those. There was some things, there were people ready to do the right thing. Is it any wonder that McCain's father ends up being an admiral and is involved in the investigation and the cover-up of the USS Liberty, the bombing by Israel of that ship? Is that a coincidence? I think not. And when you go down the rabbit hole with the rest of the family, everybody seems like they're just a story. Just a creation, just like a Federal Reserve note created out of thin air. It doesn't matter if the name is McCain, which is the real name, at least the name given to him by then the Prince of Wales. Or it doesn't matter if it's Dunham or Obama. And they're telling you this name Obama is African. Folks, you African-Americans out there, this guy is no more African-American than Colonel Sanders was, that owned Kentucky Fried Chicken. That's another ruse that the media is just parroting down your throat. And you got little clues of that. Because if you listen to what they say carefully, they keep telling you or telling us that Obama went to this church in Chicago and he's been there for 20 years. Yet you read his biography, read when he said he joined the church. We haven't even reached a full 15 years or 16 years that he's been there. But they keep saying 20, 20, 20, 20. Why? Because they can put out the disinformation, and that when you hear it enough, you don't even pay attention to the facts. But that's exactly what I did. Looking up facts, I came across more facts where he had parking tickets. And his parking tickets were almost 20 years old. You want to talk about 20 years, talk about parking tickets that had accumulated over 17 years, only $260 in penalties. 17, 18, 19 years we're talking about. Almost 20 years. And it was written about in the Somerville News in the Boston area. I actually talked to the editor that wrote that article. And it's amazing that this was not paid until something like February of 2000, after he had announced his candidacy. And one of his campaign people makes a statement like, well, everybody's got tickets. But I ask the listening audience out there, how many of you have parking tickets that have been out there for 20 years? And you haven't gone to prison for that? I mean, think about the favoritism that's played for these people. There are many anomalies in the photographs of the families too. Many anomalies. And in the stories, Obama reports that his mother died of ovarian cancer in 1995. And he has a stepmother in Africa that says that she was best friends with his mother. Well, we never heard anything from him about her going to Africa, hanging out there and hanging out in London and getting to know all these people. But she was a real globe hopper, or a globe trotter, you could call her. I don't want to demean the basketball team. She describes, and speaking about Kezia, her stepmother, through this so-called marriage with Barack Obama Sr., They're good friends. And Kezia says when she heard about her breast cancer, she was really devastated. Well, Barack said it was ovarian cancer, and Kezia says it's breast cancer. Is no one paying attention to the statements that these people are making? Now, you could say, well, what does it matter? She died, according to the story, she died November 7th. 1995. Well, when you do some research, the kind of research I did, and then you find out that she would have died in 1995, that means she died being born November 29th, is the story, 1942. She died about 3 weeks before her 53rd birthday. And I've heard Barack on tape and I've seen written the transcripts of him saying that his mother lived to be 57. And I've heard the other numbers too, but I'd never heard the correct one. Well, then I began thinking maybe he's telling the truth. Maybe she did live to be 57, and maybe she lived to be 58 and 59. But of course, this would be beyond 1995. The story is that she died of ovarian cancer, right? 1995, November 7th of 1995. And she was not buried. Her ashes were scattered over the Pacific. Barack himself said that he helped do that. The word is he was not at the funeral. There was no funeral. There was a memorial service at the University of Hawaii, Manoa, where she supposedly met Barack Sr. Now, when you're thinking about all this and putting the pieces together, it's important to keep timelines in sequence. We like to see things how they transpired chronologically, but none of this stuff makes sense when you start comparing it chronologically. Especially when she died of ovarian cancer, but her best friend who says, she's like a sister to me. This is another wife of the man she married to produce this child called Barack Obama. They became like sisters. So she's going to know. If she has cancer, she's going to know what kind of cancer it is. She says it's breast cancer. Now, I would guess that there's at least 12 inches of difference between where the breast cancer and the ovarian cancer is going to be on any woman. Pretty much average. It's certainly a different type of disease. The pain is of any kind of cancer is excruciating. But let's consider that it's only just the story. In fact, the fact that she died of two different kinds of cancer, according to two different people, tells you that it might just be a story. So I'm doing some research to find out where she had been, and I see her age, Stanley Ann Dunham, Satoru, actually under the name Stanley Ann Dunham. They didn't mention Obama, or they didn't mention Satoru. Under her maiden name, Stanley Ann Dunham, 65 years old. 65. Now, in 2008, with her birthday being November 29th, she would be 65 years old. How does a person who dies at age 52 age to the age of 65? It's impossible. Unless she's still alive. What is interesting is that if you try to find out where Barack's so-called grandmother, Madeline L. Payne Dunham, who lived in Hawaii all these years he was growing up in America, is the story. If you do some research on her, you come up with a Kelly Ann Dunham living there at the same house. And having two other addresses, actually seven other addresses in Hawaii, in Honolulu, and then addresses all over the country. And we're talking about like hundreds of addresses. This is somebody that spent number of years in Indonesia with Lolo Satoru, who was working for Mobil Oil Company. Now, it sounds like I'm jumping around, but I'm making some very, very stark contrasts in the story. Before I do that, we are going to take a short pause for the cause, and we're going to come back with a couple of messages, after a couple of messages from some of our sponsors. Some of these folks you already know, and when we get back, we will continue this part about Lolo Satoru, Stanley Ann Dunham, Barack Obama, and Indonesia. You're listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and on wtprn.com. We'll be right back.
Of the 3 million-plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At HempUSA.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At HempUSA.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from HempUSA.org.
The Idaho Observer, a monthly 24-page newspaper in its ninth year of addressing issues that affect all freedom-loving Americans, is one of the few remaining newspapers courageous enough to print the truth. Concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you? Subscribe today. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues, the Idaho Observer prints what you need to know to be a fully informed American. Go to Idaho-Observer.com or call 208-255-2307.
Well, partner, we got our pork and beans, we got our coffee, and we got this real nice campfire. Now all we need is the radio. Go get that radio so we can listen to BBS.
Yes, that boy. Got this here radio. They ain't got no battery.
Well, I told you to buy some batteries yesterday, but you forgot to buy them today.
A man can only do so many things in one day. Go to town and get some for the both of us.
Go to him. Make my day.
Dadgummit, you and your BBS radio.
Our last segment of our second hour on Evident Footprints and BBSRadio.com, also WTPRN.com. Before I go back into this little explanation of who these candidates are, I wanted to go back and reference the email I mentioned at the top of this hour. This is sort of follow-up on the fact that there's some hanky-panky going on with the banks, and I'll let this more or less speak for itself. This came under a heading of flash traffic, extremely urgent, 1-week-long bank holiday coming soon. Reliable word that Bank of America branch managers just received a message via the U.S. Federal Reserve wire system from the U.S. Federal Reserve instructing them to perhaps be ready for a 1-week universal shutdown of the banking system, including access to checking accounts, savings accounts, credit cards, and ATMs. Reliable word also has it that B of A bank branches, that's Bank of America, received a shipment of signs last week reading, quote, "We're sorry, but due to circumstances beyond our control, we cannot be open at this time," unquote. This raises the likelihood of a 1-week-long bank holiday coming soon. It would be wise to have some cash around because checks, credit cards, CDs don't work when the banks are closed, and it appears ATMs will be offline too. If you have CDs, it might be worthwhile to cash them, even though there is a penalty. If you have anything inside safe deposit boxes, in the bank that you may need, make certain you empty those safety deposit boxes tomorrow. Additional word as of 8:08 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time is that a silent run is taking place on many U.S. banks, with customers withdrawing huge amounts from all banks almost every day. My source says that unless Congress comes through with a plan which will stop the silent run, banks will be forced to close to stop the run. The U.S. Senate is voting tonight on a 400-page bill. Of course, they did that already, to address the financial crisis, and it is expected the U.S. House of Representatives would take up the Senate bill by Friday, which it appears they will do. If this new bill is defeated the same way the last one was defeated, it is likely all U.S. banks would be ordered to close as soon as all of next week. More details as they become possible. Now, there was an update regarding the passing of that document by the Senate, and now it's up to the House. It's not guaranteed, and I urge everyone to call their representatives and discourage this. This is not normal. What you're witnessing here is, again, corruption, major money laundering, major embezzlement of our funds. And they're asking us to replace the funds that they stole from us already, or the funds that they created out of thin air. We're talking about illusion upon illusion upon illusion, with a smokescreen and a veil to keep us from what's happening. And in addition to all the things we talked about tonight, here is an email from someone else. Actually, this was even broadcast on the Hal Turner show. And generally, these pan out. Not all the time, but you're getting these multiple reports. Now, why Bank of America? Well, a lot of people don't know, but they have the secret intention of turning Bank of America into the new central bank. The Fed is washed up. This money that we're looking at, if they can hypothecate it and make several trillion dollars, we won't see that money. We're going to be paying for this the rest of our lives. They're going to pocket that money, and they'll use that possibly to totally crash the dollar and bring about the Amero, which is just another name for out-of-thin-air currency, fiat currency. And what is it that they want us to rescue? They want us to rescue a fiat illusory currency. They want us to rescue usury credit. Again, if you can't read the writing on the wall, what do you see? Do you really think they're interested? This is about student loans, which only protects the interest of the insurance companies that receive that money, the kickbacks. I've got an interesting guest coming on next week that's going to be talking about what it costs to educate a student 1 year in college. And I can tell you, can tell the listening audience, it's about $1,000 a year. Oh, wait a minute, you can't get a quality education for that. I paid $40,000 or I paid $70,000 at my school. That's what they charge. You don't think people are skimming money off the top? After all, these loan programs are financed, and they're insured, and the money goes to the holding company, and the holding company starts these derivatives and hedge funds, gets lots of people to put their money into it. And they put them in offshore accounts. And when it's stolen money, now I'm not saying the average investor's money is stolen, but what they do is they play ping pong with the banks and shuffle it around from bank to bank. You think it's an accident that they go to North Vietnam? The president's meeting with the head of North Vietnam? Or they go to China, or they go to Pakistan, or Australia, one right after the other, making emergency stops in South Pacific countries? Is it an accident that this is happening, or are we just totally blind and dumbed down to the point where we don't even care, we don't even notice it? I know I'm preaching to the choir in the Patriot movement, because you folks talk about this night and day. There, and there's a positive aspect, too, even with this dual network venture that we've got going on here tonight for the first time. It's kind of interesting because we have a lot of spiritual programming on BBS Radio. Not exclusively. We talk about science. We talk about politics. We talk about government. We talk about religion. We talk about our responsibilities as citizens. We talk about the Constitution, just like on the Patriot Networks. But we do talk about self-empowerment. We talk about taking personal responsibility. We even talk about repentance. So these topics are akin to both networks. There tends to be a predominance on the Patriot Networks to talk about the Constitution, to talk about the rule of law, to talk about what the politicians are doing and what they're not doing. And there are many superfluous topics that you can talk about, such as the drug industry, the pharmaceutical companies, the oil cartels, the spraying of our skies with chemtrails. Who's behind that? We talk about these things on both of these networks. What I see may be happening here is we may be offered the opportunity to not just increase our numbers, but increase our awareness, our consciousness of what's going on, because both sides see it, but they're seeing it in some ways rather one-dimensionally or two-dimensionally, and spelling two as the number two, T-W-O, not T-O-O. We're seeing things in two dimensions instead of three, and we're seeing the illusions more than we're seeing the reality. We bought into all these illusions that they're giving us, and right now, all this controversy over this bailout is really another scam. I've not heard a decent solution or decent explanation for what's gone on. How can I make that comment when you got hundreds of congressmen and senators, you know, these professional politicians are talking about this and voting on this legislation, formulating these things, their attorneys and their advisors. Who are they? Are they the Henry Kissingers of the world and the Zbigniew Brzezinskis or the George H.W. Bushes? Are we talking about David Rockefeller or the UN or the Rothschilds? Who's behind this? Pardon me. Who's telling who what to write? That should be the question. And then a simpler question should be, why should we give them $700 billion or add another $150 billion to it? What the hell? $850 billion. Why give them that much money? They've proven they can't handle trillions. They've hypothecated over and over trillions of dollars. And the paperwork is there, folks. This has been written up. You can go to my website, directlightproductions.com. Click on articles and go down to an article that begins with the word Russian rubles. It's about Wantagates from January 2007. It's about much corruption that went on, actually. I mentioned all the people involved in Wantagate, pretty much on the surface, of course, but I lay it out that you can get an understanding of what went on. It's happening in real time. This is the money Citibank is holding. This money has been paid over and over by foreign countries. The Queen of England, a Saudi prince, China. Trillions of dollars they put into this. China pulled out $32 trillion out of their CHIPS accounts. This is the clearinghouse interpayment system that enables the United States or anyone who's under that program to borrow large sums of money, $100 million or more. What they did for 32 days back in September and October of 2006, they pulled out their chips at $1 trillion a day for 32 straight days. the next thing you heard is Paulson and Bernanke are in there in China telling the Chinese how bad they are. And how, you know, and they went there for a loan. They wanted a 1% loan, and the going rate was 4 to 5%. Why should they give them a lower loan? They just stole money from them, basically. We owe them money, and because we weren't paying it back, because these guys are pocketing it, this is what's going on, folks. Because they're pocketing the money, and they're lying to the G8 or the G7 at three summits in 1 year that they had. One was even prefaced with remarks by the Queen of England, who was a victim of a $4.594 trillion gold theft with the aid of the Bank of England, collaborating with Bush and Clinton's. They had a shutdown of the computer systems between Brussels, London, and New York in late March of 2007. They stole $4.594 trillion, something like 220,000 ounces of gold, or metric ounces, something like that. It was an enormous amount of gold they stole. They shut down the computer system of the banks. Now, keeping that in mind, here, I just read you an article about what might be happening with Bank of America. What are they going to do? Are they going to launder money through all these banks? Are they going to try to, are they doing this so they can check out what actual assets these banks have, what cash deposits they have? And all the while this is going on with paper money, these people are out there stealing gold. They're stealing gold, and we are supposed to be under the Basel II agreement, a gold standard. We're supposed to be backed by gold now. That's not happening. You can't even back our currency with Lucky Charms, let alone gold. Did I say that? I guess I did. Oh, my goodness. What the Holy Spirit leads you to say when you're in that flow. This, you know, we're in spiritual warfare here, folks, and I don't mean to get religious on you. This is really, we're fighting Satan himself. This Illuminati hydra called the International Central Banks, the Federal Reserve, the EU, all of this is nothing but organized crime masquerading as government. And it's fascist, and it's communist, and it's Zionist. And those are just labels, those are just names, but just to give you the flavor of what this is and who's behind it. It's the same people. The names of the bankers sound familiar to you when you hear the names of the brokers. When you hear the names of the brokers, they kind of sound familiar to the people in the movie industry. And when you hear the names of the people in the movie industry, they kind of parrot the names of the people in the mainstream media. Whether it's TV, mainstream radio, print media, the newspapers, magazines, half of the magazines that are out and the newspapers are run by the CIA, as are the TV networks. You've got five families running, owning and running all of them, and all the publishing companies. Most of the publishing companies, we're talking about book publishers now, are under the umbrella of a German company. No small wonder. And we look at our rights being eroded from underneath our feet, and people saying, well, we have to come back to the Constitution. Yes, we do. But you know what? We should be going back to scratch and making these people prove who they are. And there's research. Now, is my research the only research out there that talks about this? No. Fritz Springmeier has written about this. What did they do to him? They threw him in prison. Bloodlines of the Illuminati is a great book for understanding who these people are and how much corruption there is. From top to bottom, he can basically describe the history of the world and the blood connections between these people. And it makes a lot of sense. This is something I'm actually reading now after all the research I did. I'm amazed at how much of what he has printed, as I've found in other ways. And I could add to his writing, or he could add to mine. What I'd like to do is share that with the audience and bring it to everyone's consciousness, not to dwell on the dark, but to know who these people are and what they're doing. You see, when you hear what they're saying to us now, you can clearly see it's a lie. Most of you do anyway. But I hear people say, well, you know, they brought up a good point, health care. We need health care. Whose plan is that? That's been the mantra of Hillary Clinton. Get ready, folks. Hillary's not out of the picture yet. Bill Clinton's making all these rounds on comedy shows? What is that about? Why the comedy shows? Well, you know, you can't take that seriously, but it's very subtle mind control, very subtle brainwashing. It's a sort of hypnosis. You get to see this guy, which was a total joke as a president, literally they're bringing him on comedy shows so they can joke about it. And they're going to sneak Hillary back into the picture. Mark my words. Exactly how that's going to happen, that's up for debate. Could be because somebody finally decides to look at Obama's funding campaign fundraising and the fact that he's got three guys that brought down Fannie Mae. Why are these guys allowed to continue being in business, raising money? Must be somebody getting kickbacks somewhere. The money's got to be going somewhere else than where it's being reported, if it's even being reported at all. And these people had to step down from their jobs because of corruption and because they fudged the books. Literally, those are the descriptions that are used. Check out his campaign advisors. It'll amaze you what comes out with these people. It'll amaze you. And we're supposed to just go along with the plan. You know, we've got two choices. I think, and I'm going around a little bit. I promised I was going to go back and talk about Lolo Satoru, and I should do that just for a moment and then touch upon this crisis thing again, because these are the types of lies. These are lies that are going back 30, 40 years, about 40 years now. The lie I'm going to share with you. It's written in Barack Obama's book and in a lot of the biographies that at the age of, we hear 4, we hear 6, 5, we hear mixed stories. He's a certain age, we'll say that, and he goes to Indonesia. I don't even care if he says he was 40 when he went to Indonesia. His mother divorces Barack Obama Sr., and she meets this other guy at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. This guy happens to be in the oil industry, Lolo Satoru. But he goes to Indonesia, and he serves 1 year in the Indonesian Army as a geologist. Then he gets offered a job with Mobile Oil, and they're living in Indonesia. Stanley Ann, Barack's mother, is teaching English at the U.S. Embassy in Jakarta, is the story. Now, there's a problem with that, because Lolo Satoru couldn't have been working for Mobil Oil in 1968 in Indonesia. That's the story. They lived on Dempo Street. Some people say it's number 2 Dempo. Nobody seems to remember the house they lived in. In fact, many people never even saw Lolo Satoru, Stanley Ann Dunham, or Barack Obama, or his sister Maya. Nobody saw them there, except one boy that says he went to Barack's birthday party when Barack was 10 years old. One boy. That nullifies everybody else in the city of Jakarta. One boy that claims he went to Barack's birthday party. But he doesn't remember where the house was, even though he was told what the street would have been and the street address. It's a mystery. You've got conflicting stories about whether he went to a regular school, a Catholic school, a Muslim school, We're told all these stories, actually. Told he's not a Muslim, but he's got a Muslim name. We're told he's African, and his name, Obama, is not an African name. It comes from two Indonesian words. O, which means O, as in an evocative, and Bama, which means when. In the Maluku language, or the Moluccan languages, Maluku, it comes from Papua New Guinea. And the evidence shows, even by his appearance, Barack would be from New Guinea before he would be from Africa. In fact, Stanley Ann Dunham wouldn't even be his mother. Likely an Arab woman would be his mother. And it could be a dark-skinned or medium-skinned Indonesian. The Moluccans are such people. And he has all the appearances of being Moluccan, not African. Many black people, many African Americans, as they like to call themselves, will tell you the same thing, that he doesn't fit the norm. Something is different. Now, Lolo Sitoro did not work for Mobil Oil in Indonesia for one very important reason, and that's because Mobil Oil was not in Indonesia. In 1966, Standard Oil was broken up. The monopoly was broken up by the U.S. Justice Department. John D. Rockefeller opened up Mobil Oil in Malaysia, which is a big difference from Indonesia. Actually, Jakarta. Malaysia. Now, if he opened it up in Malaysia, the only way they could have been there was in Malaysia. Or the family was split up. It's a lie that doesn't hold up. Even 40 years later, doesn't hold up. Actually, yeah, we're talking 40 years. So why was that lie told? Well, they didn't want us to know about the association with the Rockefellers, even though the Dunhams worked for the Rockefellers. We're told Kansas. Remember Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz? Dorothy was from Kansas. And they're putting this story, this creation out there, just like The Wizard of Oz. None of these people are who they say they are. None of them. I could corroborate some things, though. I could corroborate that a great-grandfather, if Barack would be related to the Dunhams at all, a great-grandfather also worked for the Rockefellers, and he worked for the King of England, was on an imperial ship. Rolla Payne came to the United States, but he managed oil wells in Oklahoma, not in Kansas. So we get these stories, and when you really look at them, none of it adds up. We've got stories of murder. We've got stories of theft, everything you can imagine. Anyway, folks, we're out of time. I love being with you tonight. We're going to be on again tomorrow. Join me on Evident Footprints with our special guest, scientist Jim Murray. And Jim is actually going to be with us for the full 2 hours. So you're going to find that very interesting. Special thanks to everyone at WTPRN for making me a part of your network. And special thanks to Don Newsom at BBS Radio for making this show possible. Also, Seth Hendrick for the sound. In the meantime, I wish everybody peace, love, and light, and have a good night.